Good morning. It is so good to be here. Anyway, worship team, wonderful job. That was so enjoyable. Just an excellent job. It was great. So I'm glad to be here this morning. I want to tell you a little bit about myself in terms of my Idaho connection. After I graduated from Dallas Seminary, I went and I was teaching at the Minidoka Christian Education Association in the Rupert Paul Burley area, and it's actually in Minidoka County in Rupert, and so the Christian Education Building is the counterpart to Mormon Seminary. So off the campus of one side of the parking lot for Minidoka County High School was the Mormon Seminary building, and then over on this side was the Christian Ed building, which is that picture right there, and I was the teacher there for 14 years, and that's where, for you all at this church, I had Robert and Lisa as students in my class at that point, along with a lot of other students, and so also today, three other people that I had as students showed up to visit today, Alicia and Terry and Melissa, and I'm looking forward to visiting with them and finding out what's happened in the last 27 years or something like that. So it was a long time ago. That's what a collection of students look like right there. And then I moved to Sandy, Utah. I'm an associate pastor at Grace Community Bible Church in Sandy, Utah. That's where I've been for the last 24 years. And then I've been involved with the Grace Evangelical Society for probably the last 10 or 12 years, and that has been a joy. And that brings us to this particular point today. There's just a picture of my family. This weekend, we've been talking about the Jesus' greatest hits. And so, let me give you just a little intro video on this. Does it not seem to be happy? You get to watch us do tech here. That's not the right one. I thought I set this, but we'll see if it changed. Sound. There it is. It changed. Problem is here. Okay. Let's try that again. Parables are something that Jesus taught in, and when you go to count them, it's quite interesting. You end up with somewhere between 40 and 50 different parables that Jesus taught. So this weekend, in terms of the conference, we're doing greatest hits, so we're just doing 7 of them. I'm going to do one of them here this morning during our sermon time. So we're going to be taking a look at a parable of Jesus. Here's a rhetorical question I want you to think about, and I'm going to give you about 30 seconds, and when there's that much silence, it seems like it's kind of a long time, but I want you to think about this question. What impresses God? Hopefully you've thought of some things. Isn't it interesting how long 30 seconds seems when we just have complete silence? but what impresses God? Now, that really is kind of a challenging question to try to think about, and we're going to seek to answer that one today. But so let me ask you a simpler question. In your minds, you'll be able to answer this quite easily and quite quickly. What impresses people? Well, the list of things that impresses people, The answer, of course, varies. But some people are impressed with clothing or fashion. In this case, Air Jordan tennis shoes can be extremely expensive. Some people are impressed with the houses. That's a house that is for sale up in Park City, about 45 minutes from where I live. That's a pretty impressive house. People in general are often impressed with money, or perhaps people that have money, that sort of thing. Some people are impressed with intelligence. I really appreciate somebody that can interact on issues and talk about things and wrestle with hard questions. I greatly appreciate that. Here is a, excuse me, sorry about that, Jared. Thanks. Can a pizza executive's home deliver a buyer? Here is a home that's being sold for $30 million. This is in California. The part that's interesting about this is that this guy started as a delivery person with Domino's. That's the impressive part of the story. And he did well, and he's now selling his home for $30 million. That's really something. Some people are impressed with education. I appreciate people that are educated. University of Alabama. You may be familiar with University of Alabama. It's known for football. And by the way, if somebody has a hat like this and you see them, there is an appropriate greeting for somebody with this hat. Now, does anybody know here? What do you say? Roll Tide. Roll Tide. That's the appropriate greeting for somebody with this hat, is Roll Tide, okay? Then you know you're in the in crowd if you say Roll Tide. Now, two of my sons graduated from the University of Alabama. Both got engineering degrees there. It turned out that my wife's father, my father-in-law, he graduated a very long time ago from the University of Alabama Law School. He was a lawyer. So, although we've never lived in Alabama, we end up having a number of connections to the University of Alabama. People are impressed with other things. This one is a Tesla. This is in the car category. It's a Tesla Model S Plaid. Now, I don't know anything about Teslas. I've ridden in one. So I'm just telling you the details. I don't know this information from personal experience. It is kind of interesting. You can go online, and this particular vehicle, you can order it online right now. I guess put it on your credit card or something. And it'll cost you $108,840, and they'll deliver it in about 6 weeks. You can just order one of these if you'd like. It has a top speed of 200 miles an hour. Now, that is fast. Now, I have driven a vehicle at 100 miles an hour, and I thought that was very fast. Now, I don't want to explain why that was. Don't ask me. Just telling you it's so, okay? I'm not giving you any other information. Anyway, but that was half the speed. And it was like, boy, we are really traveling at 100 miles an hour. This thing goes 200 miles an hour. The other thing is it goes from 0 to 60 in 1.99 seconds. 1.99 seconds. So think about this. You're sitting right here, 1,001, 1,002. Now you're going 60 miles an hour. Isn't that crazy? Okay, so on the technical side, that can be pretty impressive. People are impressed with a variety of other things. There's many other things that people are impressed with. Actually, let me have you all, because it's not a humongous auditorium here, so we can talk to each other. Give me a couple other examples of things that people are impressed with. People are impressed with. Add to my list. Success. Yes. What else? Beauty. Absolutely. Big issue in our culture. Athletic accomplishments, and boy, do people get paid a lot of money for that. So, power, yeah. So, there's a list of things, and it really goes on and on, and you all could add another 20 things to that as well, if we took the time. But it is really quite a different question to ask, what impresses God? What impresses God? And that's a harder question, and actually, perhaps the better way to ask it is, who impresses God? Who impresses God? In terms of people. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to paint a caricature of two different people, and so they're going to be painted just a little bit extreme, but not completely. And I'm going to be asking the question, which one is God impressed with? I'm going to compare a specific pastor and a businessman. Okay, so I will play the position of the pastor and describe this pastor in terms of what he's like. And once again, we're asking the question, who is God impressed with? Who is God impressed with? So, on this side, I'll be the pastor, dressed well, and let me tell you some things about this particular pastor. So I have a position, I have a title. I'm a pastor of spiritual growth at the church where I work. I have education. I have three earned college degrees in terms of education. I have some 38 years of full-time ministry experience, that sort of thing. And I'm religious. Now, on this, I'm going to tell you some more things here in just a bit about this, but don't believe me, okay, when I say these things. Don't believe me. It's just for the sake of the illustration, okay? And then the other thing is I have a big Bible, okay? None of this wimpy phone stuff or, you know, the little pocket versions. You know, I got the big Bible. I got the big Bible. Okay. Not only that, remember, don't believe what I say. Is everybody clear on that? Okay. I have my quiet time every day without exception. I spend an hour in prayer and an hour in study, including Sunday. I just get up earlier because I'm so committed. I take a monthly day of prayer, of silence every month, and pray and seek the Lord. And then once a year, I go down to a Benedictine monastery in Pecos, New Mexico. There's a picture of it. It's a very nice place. And I spend a week in solitude seeking the Lord and really seek to be focused on Him. So I could be described as very religious. Let me add the qualifier. Do not believe what I just told you. Okay? Not the case. So, you know, from a religious perspective, from a God perspective, you say, okay, you know, that guy's got a pretty good list. That's really not too bad. So let me give you a contrast of another person. Okay, this guy is a businessman, okay? He's in sales. Imagine that, you know. Now, this guy, his list is not quite as impressive. He's a high school dropout. He operates a fairly shady business. He sells stuff, but he's really not selling stuff. He's just getting credit card numbers and stealing information and charging and getting some more information and so forth. And that's how he makes his money, through deception in terms of what he's doing. He has a drinking problem. He is divorced. He is sexually immoral. And he is not very religious. He is not very religious. Okay? Now, the question is, which person impresses God? Now, let me ask it a few other ways. If you have these two people, if you needed some guidance in life, let's say you were experiencing some challenges in your marriage, which person are you going to go talk to? The pastor or the businessman? Okay? Now, somebody might say, well, if I have some questions about my business, might depend on who I talk to, maybe not the pastor, but the businessman. Now, the businessman, despite being accused of not having any moral compass, he says, I absolutely do. I simply operate, my compass is, will I get caught? Will I get caught? That's how I operate. So he's got a moral compass. That's what it is. And you look at this in terms of which one might impress God, and it seems really kind of obvious. And if you want advice concerning God and life, you're going to go to the pastor. So it's kind of an extreme example of what's taking place. And that's what we're going to find in this parable today. Now, parables are stories that teach spiritual truths that it isn't a complicated thing, stories that teach spiritual truths. So we're going to actually start with the question, what doesn't impress God? What doesn't impress God? And we're going to introduce two people here. We've got, we're going to introduce the Pharisee. The Pharisee is a religious leader in the New Testament. He has a position. He has title. He has education. He has experience. And he is very religious. And in that society, he was very much respected. Now, the Pharisees have conflict with Jesus, so we have kind of mixed feelings on that, but in the New Testament, they would have been viewed very highly. So I'd invite you to turn to this parable by Jesus, Luke 18, Luke 18, 10 to 12. Luke 18, 10 to 12. Luke chapter 18, 10 to 12. And this is a fairly short parable that Jesus gives. Now, when it comes to a Pharisee, by the way, we tend, from our perspective today, looking backwards, we tend to kind of look negatively at Pharisees because they opposed Jesus in a number of senses. But not all Pharisees were bad. What was a, name me, give me the name of a famous Pharisee that we view very positively. Nicodemus. Yeah, Nicodemus, who came and talked to Jesus. They're not all bad, so don't put them in that category. Okay, in Luke 18 and verse 10, Jesus begins and he says, two men went up into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. So here we have our two people, Pharisee and tax collector, Pharisee and tax collector. The Pharisee stood and began praying this in regard to himself. Now that's a New American Standard reading, and I think it's really rough. So let me slightly adjust it. The Pharisee standing by himself praying. Now when he went to the temple to pray, he would not stand with all the other people because he wouldn't want to get become unclean. So he'd kind of stand away from them and pray by himself. That's what he would do. So that's what it's saying. And here we have his prayer. Listen to his prayer in terms of what he says. This is the parable Jesus is giving. God, I thank you that I am not like other people. Swindlers, crooked, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I pay tithes on all that I get. By the way, both of those things are above and beyond what the law requires. The law doesn't require fasting twice a week, and you're supposed to tithe on certain things, but not on everything. But this guy's going above and beyond, okay? So, with this Pharisee, I want to make some observations concerning his prayer that Jesus is giving here. First of all, we have the word I five times. You know, so you get kind of a focus on this situation. He looked down on others in general and specifically on the tax collector. And he was very self-righteous. Very self-righteous. Now, you could summarize this prayer. I mean, think about this for a second. Basically, he's coming before God and he says, Lord, I just want to thank you that I am so amazing. I mean, isn't that a great prayer? My word. That's what he's doing. That's what he's saying. Now, I'm going to show you a couple clips from Israel. My wife and I were able to go to Israel, and the Pharisees did things very publicly, and the Jews do things very publicly today as well. So here's the Wailing Wall, and the tourists can walk. There's a men's side and a women's side. This is the men's side. So I could walk in there, so I'm taking these videos. Watching these people, there's a lot of chairs, there's some tables, people are reciting prayers, chanting, some of them are bobbing, but it's a very public kind of situation, and that wall is the most sacred place to Jews today. Now, my wife, men and women are segregated, my wife was over on this other side where the women were and the children were, they didn't have to cover their heads, and they would come to this wall and pray or sit and pray. And this is a practice here today, but notice it's very, very public. And then back to the men's side, I'm walking up to the wall at this point. Some of these people have a lot of dress and are doing different things. So I'm going to walk up to the wall. And what people do is they pray at the wall. They also write down prayers on little pieces of paper. So when I get up to the wall, in the cracks where I put my hand right there, there's all kinds of little prayers that are stuffed into the cracks that people have put in there. And they have to periodically clean that out, but this is what the people are doing. And remember, Jesus talked about praying in private and stuff like that. Even today, the Jews will do this very publicly. And it's interesting, some people look at this and are very impressed with how religious they are. But when my wife and I were there, we really just felt sorrow for them. We felt sadness. They're working so hard. They're working so hard to connect with God, and they're not doing it the right way. So they're not getting there. They're not getting there, okay? God isn't impressed with the public or the public stuff like this, or the Pharisee that prayed, how great he was, that sort of thing. So God is not impressed with that. Well, what does impress God? Now Jesus in the parable is going to go ahead and tell us about a second person, and that is in, and what we're going to find with this tax collector is, let me find my place here. The tax collector, in society, he's viewed very negatively, okay? First of all, he is a Jewish person. He's a Jewish person, but he is viewed as a traitor because he works for the Roman government. He collects taxes from the Jews. And the way they do that is that Rome would require the tax collector, based on the number of people, to turn in this much money at a certain time. And so the tax collector would have to turn in that much money to keep his job, but to get paid, he had to collect more. So he was asking, and some tax collectors would collect a whole lot more and take a lot of money from the people. Others would take a little bit. And so they tended to be dishonest in terms of what they did, and they're not religious. They're not religious. And truly, they are viewed as traitors. Okay? So the Pharisees, from a Jewish perspective, are viewed as the heroes. And the tax collector is viewed very badly as a traitor. Okay? That's what's happening in terms of these two groups of people. So take a look at verse 13 to see how Jesus describes this guy. But the tax collector standing some distance away. Now in this case, you have the group of people and the Pharisee stands away for them not to be contaminated. And the tax collector is just staying away from people in general because people don't like him. And in fact, the fact that the tax collector is at the temple praying would actually, in fact, be a little odd because tax collectors aren't religious. They usually didn't go to the temple. But this guy did, and he was going there to pray, which he did in Jesus' parable. And was even unwilling to raise his eyes toward heaven. And this is what he did. But he was beating his chest, saying, God, be merciful to me, the sinner. Be merciful to me, the sinner. He wasn't even saying that I am a sinner. He was saying the sinner, the sinner. And he had his head bowed, and he just cries out to God for mercy. That's what he does. That's what he does. A totally different approach. So the tax collector, he asks for mercy. He does not look to himself. He has no pretense. And he admits, and he says, I am the sinner. I am the sinner. Okay? He is not talking about how great he is. He knows before God that he's in trouble. And he just basically says, Lord, I depend on your mercy to me. That's all I've got. I have nothing. I have nothing. Just you. Your goodness. That's it. I come to you because of who you are and ask for your mercy. Okay? He's not pretending. He is not claiming to be self-righteous. He's not comparing himself to anybody else. That sort of thing. It's kind of interesting today. I don't know how much you all run into this in terms of we have the different generations with the with the baby boomers and the Gen X's and the millennials and the Gen Z's and so forth. And there's some interesting contrasts between how the generations do things. But one of the things that happens with millennials, and millennials need to be divided into both older and younger millennials, but I'll just put them together for the moment. With millennials, one of the things that they highly value is authenticity. They want somebody to be real. They don't want somebody to be perfect, because they know nobody's perfect, but they want people to be real, okay? And that's what the tax collector was. He was real. He was real, okay? And God is going to respond positively to that. The point being, the millennials are right. The millennials are right. They're tracking with God on this. Being real, not pretending, not having pretense. So let's take a look at God's stamp of approval. He's presented these two people, just like I presented two people. He's got the Pharisee and the tax collector. Now, the crowd is listening to this. The Pharisees are like, oh, yeah, the Pharisee, he's the hero of this story. The people are thinking, yeah, the Pharisee's the hero of this story. That guy's bad. So they say, we know where this story is going in terms of what's going to happen. So let's see what Jesus does when he hits verse 14. He says to them, I tell you, this man went to his house justified rather than the other. Which man? The tax collector. Can you believe it? I mean, the Pharisees would have been appalled. They would have been appalled that Jesus said such a thing. That's just ridiculous. That's absurd. The people would have said, well, that doesn't sound right. But some of the people would have said, that's cool. Jesus looks at the heart. That's cool. Okay? What impresses God? Well, this guy did, because he was real. No pretense. Didn't come to him with his list of performance, how great I art. Okay? He didn't come up with that. I want to focus on this this word justified here. It's a very key word. In the New Testament, which is written in Greek, it's diakinos, and diakinao, the verb. And it shows up some 39 times in the New Testament, primarily in Romans and in Galatians. But it's translated two ways. One of them is declared righteous, and if you have studied Romans or Galatians, you'd be familiar with that. And that's exactly right, that this word refers to being declared righteous before God. But the use of it in this passage with this parable, I don't think is that usage. The other use that shows up is vindicated. It's translated vindicated in the New American Standard like four times. And vindicated has this idea that something is shown to be right, or confirmed to be correct. Confirmed to be correct, or accepted by God. Accepted by God, which I think is what's happening in this parable. But we have this shows up in a lot of regular life. My wife and I, typically when the weather's not bad, we will go walking. We have about 2.5 miles that we walk around the neighborhood. We also like to go hiking, and we seek to do that. There's a lot of wonderful hiking in Utah. Not too long ago, this was just in the fall, we were out hiking and some clouds were coming in, and we were only partway through our walk, and we got to a particular place, and it was like, okay, do we go that way and finish our walk in hopes that we don't get wet, or do we turn here and go back? And I looked at it, and I said, now we better go back. So we turned, and we headed back to the house. And then when we did get back to the house, it was probably another 10 minutes, it did start raining like crazy, okay? So my decision was vindicated. It was confirmed to be a good decision, kind of a thing. And so that's what vindicated is. And so Jesus is saying of this tax collector, you know, the tax collector, that man went away vindicated before God. Vindicated before God. Now, with this word vindicated, some people might say, well, doesn't it always mean declared righteous? It doesn't. Let me just show you one of the four uses of it. In 1 Timothy, Paul is writing to Timothy, and he says, by common confession, great is the mystery of godliness. He, referring to Jesus, who was revealed in the flesh. In other words, Jesus came and took on flesh. He was vindicated in the Spirit. Now, did Jesus need to be declared righteous? No. He was the epitome of righteousness. But him taking on flesh, I mean, if somebody were thinking about that plan, if humans were getting together and saying, well, we think God should come and take flesh and have the people kill him. That's a great idea, don't you think? Yeah, not so much. Okay, but he came and took on flesh, and the Spirit of God confirmed and vindicated Jesus did exactly the right thing. He was vindicated. He wasn't declared righteous. He didn't need to be declared righteous. He was already righteous. Okay? So we see the conclusion, which is the second half of Luke 18:14. Take a look at that. He now applies it. He's been talking about the Pharisee and the tax collector. Now he's going to apply it to the people listening. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who is humbled, who humbles himself, will be exalted. That's what impresses God. Somebody that is humble before him. Not pretending, not playing games, not trying to impress God with our performance, just being real. Okay? God doesn't want us to be perfect. He wants us to be real. Oh, side note for those of you who know the verse, be perfect, or with the perfect, he's talking about maturity and growth and completeness is what he's talking about in those kind of passages. He doesn't want us to be absolutely flawless because he knows we can't, but he wants us to be real. Now, notice back at the introduction that I didn't start with in Luke 18, verse 9, back up to that. And here's what Luke says as this is introduced. And he, referring to Jesus, told a parable to some people who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and viewed others with contempt. That's who he was talking to. Those that viewed themselves as righteous and viewed other people with contempt. That's what this parable was about. And he said, no, it's not what impresses God. That's not what works. That's not how this works. So on the pastor and businessman, in terms of which one would impress God, well, that would depend on how they approach God. You know, you look at this list, and clearly the pastor's doing more things that are pleasing to God than the businessman. We know that. But in terms of how they approach God, it's going to depend on heart. It's going to depend on heart, how they approach God. So what impresses God? Somebody who comes to God and they're humble, they're real, they're honest, and they depend on God, not on themselves. Not on themselves. Now, with this word justified, the declared righteous is not what's going on in this parable. That's not what's occurring. It is this idea of vindicated. But let me step back to this word, declared righteous, which shows up a number of times in the New Testament. I want you to flip over to Romans 10:1. Romans 10:1. Paul is writing here, and he's writing about the nation of Israel. He's been presenting to the believers in Rome things that they need to know. And the natural question comes up is, well, what about Israel? You made promises to Israel. What's going to happen? What's going to happen there? And he says, brothers and sisters, my heart's desire and my prayer to God for them, this is the Jews, like Paul is for their salvation. Is for their salvation. For I testify about them that they have a zeal for God, but not in accordance with knowledge. Have you ever known people who have a zeal for God, but not in accordance with knowledge? That's how he describes the Jews, his fellow Jews. For not knowing about God's righteousness and seeking to establish their own, they did not subject themselves to the righteousness of God. Notice that, subject themselves to the righteousness of God. For God is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone who believes. To everyone who believes. It isn't performance. It's not performance. That's our natural tendency. If we're going to be righteous before God, it has to be because of Jesus that we believe in. Let me tell you, let me give you the Bible in four chapters. Okay? When we look at the world, and you read the news and so forth, our world's really doing great, isn't it? I mean, man is just progressing. Things are just getting better every day. It's just fantastic, isn't it? It's amazing. No, it's completely messed up. It gets more messed up every day. And the question gets to be, well, how in the world do we end up with this mess? Well, chapter one, it starts with creation. Everything back at creation was great. God created the world, the first people, Adam and Eve, first marriage. They got along great. They got along with God. They walked with God. They were in complete harmony with the environment. Everything was great. God gave them free will and told them not to eat from a particular tree, and they did. And so this chapter of this wonderful place came to an end with the rebellion. They disobeyed God. I mean, eating some fruit, we don't know what kind, but eating some fruit is hardly, a criminal offense that's prosecuted. Except God said, don't do it. They said, I'm going to do it my way, not God's way. See, that's the rebellion. And since we're all connected to Adam and Eve, we have this rebellion. And I would propose to you that really all of us in this room, we do. We have this attitude in us that says, nobody's going to tell me what to do. Not even God. I know what's best. I'm smart. I'm doing it my way. Well, that's the rebellion. That's the rebellion that we suffer from. And that has created the mess that we are in. God looked at it and said, man, you guys are in a lot of trouble. So he sends a rescuer. He sends a hero to solve this situation because we cannot do it ourselves. We don't just need help. We need a full rescue. So he sends Jesus, the rescuer, who gives his life to make it possible so we can restore, have a restored relationship with God. But we have to not trust in ourselves. But we have to trust in Jesus. And that's the only way to get there, is believing in him. Okay? I don't know where everybody's heart is today. Everybody trusts in something, by the way. Everybody does. My atheist uncle just trusts that there's no God. That's what he trusts in. Everybody trusts in something. So what are you trusting in? You only get the rescue if you believe in Jesus. And if you do that, God gives you his life. And then when you have his life, that gives you reservations in the kingdom. And that's the final chapter that we're looking forward to, the restoration. The restoration of everything. New heaven, new earth, everything. But you have to have reservations. And it depends not on our performance, on impressing God. The kingdom is coming, and God is taking reservations. I hope you have yours, because I want to look forward to you at being in the kingdom and walking up to you and say, let's talk. Remember that day back in Idaho where I got to come and visit you all? And we can talk about that, okay? But more than that, we get to walk over and give Jesus a hug. Wouldn't that be cool? Okay? Let's pray. Dear Jesus, we thank you that you look at our hearts. You don't ask us to perform. You don't ask us to have an impressive list. But rather, you want us to be real. And when we're real, we realize we're sinful. You, of course, know it completely. We're the ones that have to catch up with reality and realize that we need you so much. And we thank you that you offer this free gift of eternal life by simply believing in Jesus. And we thank you that we can look forward to a day that is different from the world we presently live in, one where you rule and things are as they should be. Lord, we're excited and look forward to that day. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.